We're pleased to have Dr. Lee here. Dr. Lee is a professor of health economics with the University of California, Davis Medical School. He's been researching occupational safety and health issues for 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam. Thank you for organizing this session, and it's a pleasure to be on such a distinguished panel of speakers. Let me just give the bottom line here, and then we'll go through some of the methodology. There are a couple points. One is that the cost, the economic burden of occupational injury and illness is more expensive than the cost of cancer. I don't think that the public and research and public policy attention to occupational injury and illness is commensurate. For example, the budget for the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health recently has been around $300 million. The budget for the National Cancer Institute is about $5 billion. So we're spending about 16 to 17 times more on cancer at the National Institute of Health level versus occupational injury and illness. Another point is that these costs are substantial. In fact, workers' compensation systems cover about 21% of these costs, which means that nearly 80% of the costs are covered by others. And this includes, of course, injured workers and their families, as well as Medicare and Medicaid, which means taxpayers are picking up the bill, and then, of course, private insurance companies that are associated with the place of business. Okay. Here's the introduction. We've been through some of this already. It's nice to have cost estimates. They're useful in public policy debates. And it turns out that lots of diseases, lots of researchers look at other diseases and generate estimates on an annual basis. So for coronary heart disease, stroke, cancer, hypertension, there are many other diseases that are, you'll see estimates of the costs every year. However, for occupational injury and illness, these come out about once every 10 or 15 years. However, there have been other related studies, not just for the overall cost of occupational injuries and illnesses. For example, every year, the National Academy of Social Insurance does produce an estimate for the cost of workers' compensation. But workers' compensation data are incomplete. As I've mentioned, they only cover about 21% of the costs. And there's lots of evidence that just in terms of the number of cases that workers' compensation is not picking up most of injuries, or certainly not illnesses, or fatal illnesses. And National Safety Council also produces an estimate. So the numbers that are reported here are estimates generated by applying a set of methodological assumptions to available data. Methods and data are divided into subsections, which we'll get to now. The first one is the cost of illness estimates are divided into medical and productivity costs. We take the societal perspective, that is the broadest perspective, for costs. Medical costs, as you know, involve hospitals, physicians, drugs, nursing homes. Indirect costs include lost wages, lost fringe benefits, and lost home production. Home production is the benefit associated with rearing children, cooking, cleaning, making home repairs. And we, for costs that go beyond 1 year, we use the 3% discount rate, which is customary in the literature. We get involved with incidence and prevalence of illness and disease. We use the incidence method for measuring injuries because, this is what a lot of other people have used, and the data on injuries from the Bureau of Labor Statistics are incidence-based, that is, there are new injuries that occur within a given year. Also, the cost data associated with injuries are incidence-based. They're from the National Compensation, NCCI, National Compensation and Compensation Insurance, National Commission on Compensation Insurance, I think is what it is. Anyway, that's also incidence-based. That is to say that when somebody is injured on the job, the council comes up with an estimate of what the current and future costs are discounted back to the present. So that's an incidence estimate. However, when we look at diseases, we take a prevalence estimate for COPD, for example, how many COPD cases there are in the country now due to occupational exposures, and what's the cost being generated now due to those exposures. That's a prevalence base. It's very difficult to come up with incidence-based estimates for diseases because you have to, there's really very little data associated with forecasting what the costs of specific diseases are going to be for the next 10 or 20 years. Injuries, there are good estimates on those. Okay, I've already mentioned this. The numbers of non-fatal injuries are from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, Survey of Occupational Injuries and Illnesses, and from the federal government. We did make adjustments for farm workers because the Bureau of Labor Statistics doesn't have good data. Very few people actually have good data on farm workers or domestics, and self-employed are frequently excluded from some of these data sets. There is an underreporting problem associated with occupational injuries and illnesses that a lot of workers, when they're injured, don't feel comfortable reporting reporting an injury because workers' compensation these days kind of has a negative connotation, a stigma associated with it. So a lot of people would just rather go on the insurance that is provided by many employers. And in some cases, employers are not really encouraging workers to file workers' compensation claims. So we estimate that there's a rate of about 40% of injuries not being reported. Okay, I mentioned that the estimates of medical and indemnity costs are from the NCCI, and they multiply the data from the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics, times NCCI to get cost estimates. There are wage replacement rates get involved with this estimate. Wage replacement rate is what the workers' compensation will pay a worker when he or she is injured while they're off the job. So let's suppose their wage is $20 an hour. Then the wage replacement rate might be $9 an hour. And the wage benefit is data are provided by the NCCI, and we can interpolate to what the wages would have been based upon what the benefits are, the indemnity benefits. Okay, for non-fatal illnesses, we have the same procedure, accounting costs of fatal injuries. This is more straightforward because the Bureau of Labor Statistics maintains the Census of Fatal Occupational Injuries, which is more or less a gold standard, really, for occupational injury and research. So I just take that estimate of deaths and multiply by medical costs derived from at least Biddle's model associated with costs of fatal injuries. When it comes to fatal diseases, I use the attributable fraction percentages that were developed by Kyle Steenland. And I looked at a number of diseases and basically used the percentages that he and his colleagues from NIOSH generated. And there are a number of factors associated with that. For example, the asthma. We looked at the deaths beginning at age 20. But for most other diseases, it's deaths beginning at age 30 because the thinking is that it takes a while for exposure on the job before there's any risk of death. That's not true with asthma, though, because it seems to happen more frequently or easier with exposures. There's a top-down approach, which means that I look at the overall costs for the nation that we saw earlier with the 70% of gross domestic product generated by medical care. So there are estimates that the federal government puts out every year. So, for example, $696 billion for hospitals, $606 billion for professional services. So you begin with these large numbers, and you say, all right, what percentage of these numbers are attributed to COPD or circulatory disease and you whittle it down to your age group and gender group. Let's see, indirect costs. We looked at estimating the numbers of disease deaths within age and gender groups. Again, loss of wages, fringe benefits, and multiply the deaths by cost per death. This is a busy slide, but it just shows you there are a lot of numbers involved. On the left-hand side, we have, this is the split up on the left-hand side based upon workers' compensation information, categories. And here's some data, average costs, medical costs per injury on the right-hand side. And I see I'm going to have to move along. There's a paper in the back, by the way, if you want to get involved in detail, and certainly we can talk about this afterwards. I also conducted a sensitivity analysis, so I changed the underreporting percentages, and that increased or decreased the overall cost. The overall cost, by the way, I should mention, is $250 billion a year. The overall cost for medical care for cancer in the year 2007 was $217 billion. So this is a sensitivity analysis where looking at changes in the reporting rates, changes in the workers' compensation replacement rates. I went from the top to the bottom in terms of the assumptions that were the most problematic, consequential for the analysis. Also looked at number seven there is added job-related osteoarthritis. You know, one of the best predictors of osteoarthritis is if your knee or hip was injured in your prior life as a football player or on the job. In any case, so you can have a knee or hip injury, let's say, at age 30 or 40, and then at age 60 and 70, or let's say age 70, you can have a knee replacement or hip replacement. It would be very expensive. That could be traced back to the injury on the job, yet that's paid for by Medicare. So it's just another aspect of what is and is not covered by workers' compensation. Oh, here's some. The estimate was $250 billion, and some of these other estimates are up here for cardiovascular, for coronary heart disease, and diabetes. One reason, of course, that costs are so large is because most adults between 22 and 64 in the United States are working, so every day, you know, we are exposed to hazards on the job. And these are cumulative. So that's the main reason, is because there's so many of us that are working. And if you compare this to, so let's see, the number of deaths we have on the job, 59,000. Compare that to motor vehicles, 43,000. Breast cancer, 40,000. Prostate cancer, 29,000. Homicide, 18,000, and so on. So there are more people dying on the job than some of these other diseases. Okay, here I talked a little bit about workers' compensation, which I think I've already mentioned with the at the bottom line here. And here there are a lot of limitations to this study that we could talk about for a long time. So let's go to the conclusion. Occupational injury and illness costs are substantial. It's because so many people are working. Every job carries some risk of injury or disease. Most Americans are working 40-50% of waking hours. Some costs are borne directly by employers through workers' compensation premiums, but the workers' compensation benefits cover actually is less, quite a bit less, about 21%. All members of society share these costs. Taxpayers pay through Medicare, Social Security, disability insurance. Employers and individuals pay through high premiums and non-workers' compensation insurance carriers. Interworkers and family pay. Total medical and indirect costs are on a par with cancer. Okay, I've already mentioned this. Despite the high costs, occupational injuries and illnesses don't receive the same research, medical, or public attention as other diseases. This, again, is unfortunate, as we saw on the slides. You know, if we have 70% of medical care, gross domestic product being generated by medical care, we ought to be looking for ways to allocate resources to get the biggest bang for the buck. And I think that this research certainly suggests that occupational injuries and research is one of these low-hanging fruits where we could really make an impact on trying to bend this cost curve down. Okay. Yes. No, the cancer estimates include productivity costs. The cancer estimates include productivity costs.
So, time-weighted
work? Absolutely.
Okay.
And the cancer cost, by the way, for productivity is more than for cardiovascular, because a lot of cardiovascular occurs after people are retired, whereas cancer, as we know, can occur among people that are working. That's why if you look at costs for the productivity costs for cancer, you're going to find them as high or greater than cardiovascular, even though cardiovascular in terms of sheer number is greater, but the productivity costs of cancer are significant. And that's the same thing that's going on here. We have with injuries, a lot of injuries can occur, you know, at age 20 and 25. And so you have many years of lost earnings. But yes, the cancer estimates that I cite here include productivity costs. Well, it's been published. It's in the Milbank Quarterly. And yes, I did get some newspaper and media attention a few months ago.